Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sun King Seichow has supported independent tech news directly for 5 years. Be like Sun King. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, June 21st, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Allison Sheridan from the Podfeet Podcast Empire.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Shane.
Is that the Outland Empire, the Podfeet Podcast Empire?
Yeah, you take the 234.
See Good Day, Internet, for more on that. We got some great stuff to talk about today. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Huawei says its smartphone sales have risen in the past few days in Western Europe, though no actual numbers were released. Meanwhile, Reuters cites a report from the state-owned RIA news agency in Russia, saying a Russian deputy of communications minister told it that Huawei will begin talks to possibly use Russia's Avrovra operating system.
Oh, that makes it way better. Well, after a meeting with Huawei CEO Ren Zhengfei, German economy minister Peter Altmaier said Huawei must demonstrate it can meet security requirements in order to be part of building out the country's 5G infrastructure. In March, Germany established tougher criteria for telecom network equipment vendors.
Foxconn founder Terry Gao told the company's annual general meeting that he is officially stepping down as chairman of the company in order to run for president of Taiwan as part of the Kuomintang party. You will remain on Foxconn's board of directors. He will remain on Foxconn's board of directors. Gao also urged Apple to move production to Foxconn operations in Taiwan. Foxconn handles some of Apple's production in China and elsewhere. But, you know, his parting shot was like, and everybody move their stuff here, bye.
A study from Sweden's Ericsson finds that India has the highest rate of average data use per smartphone at 9.8 gigabytes per month at the end of 2018. The study predicts that the rate will reach 18 gigabytes per month by 2024. Increased LTE subscriptions, better data plans, and increased video watching are among the reasons given. Regionally, average data use per smartphone in Northeast Asia was 7.1 gigabytes per month, followed by North America at 7 gigabytes.
So that whole thing is just fascinating to me. Now, one of the things I thought was interesting was that the statistic is average data use per smartphone, and India's average or the penetration smartphone penetration in the country is not as high as a lot of other places, but the rate of change of the number of smartphones is it's bananas, right? It's really, really growing quickly.
That's why they're expecting that 18 number, right? Because people are just going to keep using.
Yeah, so not only is their penetration increasing, they're using it much more than anybody else. That is really interesting.
All right, Allison, tell us about the study to find out if these names of automatic systems in cars are misleading.
This is a story close to my heart. Mm. A survey from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety asked 2,000 people about advanced driver assistance systems, referring to them only by their brand names, such as Autopilot, Traffic Jam Assist, Super Cruise, etc. Respondents were asked about two systems and were not told the car maker or capabilities in order to test the perception of the feature based on its name alone. Respondents were asked to rate the safety of things that the car makers say you shouldn't do, like taking your hands off the wheel, watching a movie, or taking a nap. More people believed it was safe to perform these behaviors with autopilot than the other six systems. 48% said it was safe to take hands off the wheel for autopilot versus 33% for ProPilot Assist and less for others. Thankfully, only 6% said it was safe to take a nap with autopilot, 3% said so for the others.
At least it's below 10, right? So, you know, there's been a lot of debate about whether the name autopilot just kind of makes people think it's safer than it is, because they think, oh, I can just let go and on autopilot. And a lot of times the argument is, well, airplanes still need a pilot. So calling it autopilot shouldn't mean you can just let it go. But it's not about what it does mean. It's about what people think it means. So the study was an attempt to kind of evaluate that in a controlled manner. Allison, what do you think?
Yeah, that was really fascinating, because it absolutely does change your mind about how you think about something is what it is named. So it's like, well, they wouldn't have called it autopilot if it wasn't autopilot. But I also find people's reactions to these things really interesting. I recently bought a Tesla, and a guy said to me, he said, well, you know, Allison, I know a friend of mine, she had that, has that Tesla there, and she had it on auto navigation, and she fell asleep at the wheel and woke up 2 miles past her house. Yeah, where would she have awakened if she hadn't had autopilot two hours?
Did she fall asleep because she had autopilot? I mean, that's a whole different question, right?
Could be. Yeah. But I think she woke up dead if she fell asleep behind a regular car. Totally. So, you know.
Possibly, yeah.
I think these things are great, but I agree that the naming convention. But to tell you the truth, in a Tesla, there's like 12 different names for things.
And some of those names are a little nuts, right? Yeah. Insanity mode. Like, that doesn't sound good. But it's actually Ludicrous a feature that works really well when used appropriately.
But the autopilot thing in particular, there's auto navigation, which is a completely different thing than autopilot. Auto navigation, it's actually changing interchanges for you. It would take the 134 to the 2 to the 110.
For you.
Yeah.
At what kind of speed?
Freeway speeds.
Ludicrous speed.
Sorry.
You just don't want to sleep through that. No, my goodness.
I think this shows that possibly calling it autopilot has an effect that makes people trust it more. It's not the last word definitive study. I don't think it means calling it autopilot is recklessly irresponsible. But I have been of the opinion that, I don't know, maybe just don't call it autopilot and you'll have less problems. This just seems to bolster that argument.
Yeah, something more like assist rather than auto makes a big difference. I have a friend who he's had a Model S for a few years and does a lot of long distance driving and is like, oh yeah, you know, I'd like watch movies on Netflix. I won't out him, and you shouldn't do it. But he's like, no, it's so good, it's so reliable. I hope that nobody does that ever.
Friend of mine bought one just because he said, I was already texting and driving, so I figured I might as well have a Tesla so I can text and drive.
That's a horrible reason.
No.
Okay, these are not representative people of the general population, all right? Let's make that clear right now.
These are the things that kind of scare us about the whole autopilot situation. Moving on, though. France, which has the rotating presidency of the Group of Seven, also known as G7, has ordered the creation of a task force to study how central banks can make sure things like Facebook's Libra are governed by proper regulations and protect consumers and prevent money laundering. The group doesn't oppose the creation of an instrument for financial transactions, but wants to make sure that Libra and others don't become sovereign currencies of their own. The task force wants to define what a stable cryptocurrency is and how fixed exchange rates should be.
Yeah, from my reading of the Libra Association, they want all this stuff. They want governments to set the rules and tell them what they can and can't do as far as being used as a currency. They want to play by the rules for preventing money laundering. So I don't think the Libra Association has a problem with any of this. This is why they announced it so far in advance of when they plan to launch it, because they want to work through these issues. Allison, have you got a chance to wrap your head around the whole Libra thing?
No, not really. I did listen to you guys talk about it, but I don't know. I still feel like it's fake. I mean, I understand it's real and it exists and it's going to be a real thing, but it's
not
still
fake.
Yeah.
Well,
but you could be forgiven for being like,
here's the thing. It's really no different than when you send money over the internet right now. When you send money over the internet, you're not sending paper bills, right? You're not faxing things or anything. Yeah. There's no teleportation.
But it takes 3 days for no reason.
Exactly. It takes three days because they want to prevent money laundering and fraud, and they didn't have an efficient way to do that until blockchain came along. Libra Association is saying, hey, we have the technology to do this better now. What if we did this across multiple currencies and just eased things up for people?
Yeah. Oh, but I still don't have an explanation for why ACH doesn't work on a weekend. Do you know that doesn't?
Because you need I think it's because you need a guy named Pat to push
pull
a
the lever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's why. See, I'm comfortable with that. It's like when you go to Starbucks, there's no line. You're like, what's wrong? I got to get out. I got
to
go.
Because everybody used their Bitcoin to buy their Starbucks over the app. That's why. Walmart confirmed that it uses computer vision technology as part of its missed scan detection surveillance program that identifies scanning errors as well as missed items at checkout. The system began to roll out 2 years ago and is deployed at more than 1,000 stores, looking at both self-checkout and human cashiers. So you can understand why this might be needed at self-checkout for sure, but even human cashiers might miss that somebody grabbed something and stuck it in a bag, or maybe they're colluding with the person, who knows.
Or it's down at the bottom of the cart, cashier doesn't see it.
The system works fast enough to notify employees about the miss and scan the missing item before it leaves the store. So this is meant to prevent theft.
It's interesting that it's sort of mimics Amazon Go's store model, where you just take stuff that you need and leave the store and you get charged for it based on what you've taken. This is a theft prevention tool, but it, you know, as the lines kind of blur more and more, you know, how often are you going to be able to go through a register and kind of not worry about, arguing with somebody over whether the eggs were on sale or not, because it's all just sort of in the system and automatic.
That would be nice. I would like to understand more about the computer vision technology. I didn't catch exactly what is it doing. Is it looking at the shapes of the stuff left in your cart and then saying, okay, wait a minute, we didn't have a shape like that? I didn't really.
I mean, it's AI. So they've trained it to say, this is what it looks like when something has been missed, send an alert when you see that. And so you don't train it on a thing. You train it on having it do this sort of process and then alerting and doing reinforcement and saying, yes, you got it right that time. That's the thing about AI. We don't always know.
Yeah, we don't know how it's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bothers me. But okay, I already said I didn't believe in cryptocurrency, so I can't say I don't believe in this. Only get one each show, right?
We'll let you have as many as you want, to be honest. That's fine. I think this one is less controversial. I could see where you could have some healthy skepticism of whether cryptocurrency and blockchain would work in practice for what they're saying they want it to. I think it's likely that it can. It's been proven in other ways. This sort of thing, though, I mean, this, you've got a whole Amazon Go store, like you said, that does even more than this. This is almost a limited version of what's possible.
And Walmart did say that it's reducing, what was the word they had for
shrinkage.
Shrinkage. They did say it, they have been able to measure significant or some amount of shrinkage for these stores that have this computer vision technology. So that's
I was in the pool.
Yeah, nobody has stole a portable pool since this went into place. All right. Section 230 of the U.S. Communications Decency Act, or CDA 230, as you'll often hear it called, says, and I'll quote, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider." In other words, if you're running Facebook or a message board or whatever, you're not liable for the things people say on your platform. This is especially important for ISPs that are transferring all kinds of stuff all the time. U.S. Senator Josh Hawley has proposed ending this. He has the Ending Support for Internet Censorship Act that would remove CDA 230 protection from any company that has more than 30 million active monthly users in the United States, or 300 million worldwide, or more than $500 million in revenue. You meet one of those three criteria, you lose your CDA 230 safe harbor. Now, companies could apply to get it back. They'd have to go to the United States Federal Trade Commission and submit an audit of their content moderation policies. And then the FTC would look it over and see if the platform's moderation was politically neutral. If four of the five FTC commissioners agreed that it was politically neutral, then they could get their CDA 230 protection back.
Wait a minute. So this is only about politics?
This is about political neutrality. So Senator Hawley is
saying... Not about decency.
Well, forget the name of the act. It doesn't matter about decency. CDA 230 says you can't be liable for what someone else publishes. And places like Facebook rely on this to be able to allow folks to publish stuff. Otherwise, they'd have to approve every single post.
Right.
Holly's saying, I'm going to take away that protection unless you can prove to me that you are not oppressing speech based on political orientation.
So they can suppress speech on all kinds of other things, well, just not politics.
No, that I think you hit the nub of this. If I lose my safe harbor protection, it is now in my interest to suppress all speech, whether it's political or not. And
just
so
in
if
case.
I want to get my safe harbor back, I have to prove somehow something that's probably very difficult to prove because it depends on who's looking at it, what they think is politically neutral speech. And so if I can't get that back, I am definitely going to be suppressing all kinds of political speech, whether it's neutral
right.
or not,
yeah.
because I don't want to be liable for it.
This makes absolutely no sense. And the specifics of 300 million worldwide, 30 million active monthly users, or 500 million in revenue.
So basically Facebook.
Is there basically just one or two companies?
Twitter,
above,
Facebook, you know, Apple, maybe Google, Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is so obviously targeted.
They're definitely going after Facebook and Twitter. In this.
This is
an Instagram. Yeah.
Need some mouthwash.
Well, it is a bill designed to appeal to voters because it says, "Hey, I'm going to protect you. You folks have been worried that you're not able to say what you want to say. I'm going to protect you." That's great. But the solution is just a stick to say, "Hey, you big tech companies, I'm going after you," which also appeals to the voters. Everybody hates tech, both sides of the aisle these days, right? So it's not about this bill making sense. It's about winning votes.
I'm going to wash my mouth out with a better story.
Okay.
Verizon has been dethroned. AT&T and its 5G evolution isn't actual 5G, as Tom will tell everyone. But I have had like three or four people in the last 3 weeks think it is 5G. Anyway, their 5G evolution does make AT&T America's fastest mobile network in 2019. PC Mag reports it drove through 30 cities and 25 states running 60,000 speed tests to determine the fastest mobile network nationwide with Samsung Galaxy S10 phones. AT&T currently has more LTE spectrum than T-Mobile or Verizon, according to Fierce Wireless. However, AT&T spectrum is often fragmented, coming in many small pieces rather than few large chunks, which is advantageous with mini modems.
That part I didn't know. I didn't realize that.
So newer modems can take advantage of this fragmentation, which helps AT&T be able to make better use of its spectrum where it couldn't before.
Oh, okay. So you're not saying fragmentation is a good thing. It's just
fragmentation
makes your network run more smoothly, at least in certain cases.
With new modems. It didn't used to. Before, it was like, well, we can't use all of this spectrum all the time. But now new modems can grab those pieces of the spectrum. So now, even if your spectrum's fragmented, you're like, yeah, but we got more. These new modems can handle that.
I need to start running some speed tests so that I feel like it's faster. And it doesn't matter. It's still not going to work in my house, just so you know.
Well, and that's why Sasha Segan and the PC Mag folks do a great job with this. They go drive around the country taking samples. They don't hit every state, but they do get a good representative sample. And I always rely on this to kind of get a sense of where things are going. And it makes sense to me that AT&T wants to boost up its LTE speeds, whatever they're calling them, their LTE. They want to boost up their LTE speeds in advance of 5G actually rolling out, because when people buy a 5G phone and subscribe to 5G service, when they're on LTE, they don't want to see a noticeable drop. Right. So they want that LTE to be as fast as possible. So they've been improving that. Actually, Verizon and T-Mobile have been as well. And AT&T has just, you know, give them credit, done a really good job of that. And
it's hard to say something nice about AT&T, but we're having to, right?
Well, Verizon
other than them
too.
Lying about is 5G on their service, they're doing a very good job.
5GE, come on, it's fine. They're number one.
Extra 5G.
I'm a Verizon customer. I'm more or less happy with, I'm not necessarily happy with my bill every month, but I am happy with the coverage. However, I think stories like this, they always tend to, there's always somebody who's like, yeah, well, you should hang out in my house sometime because right. I have to like be pressed up against the window on the western side of my house in order to make a phone call because you just have these weird pockets no matter how good any big company's network is.
And you turn on Wi-Fi calling and you still have 4 calls dropped this week alone.
That too.
Just saying.
You should get a different provider then. I mean, yeah, I had Verizon in the Bay Area, and it was great. Loved it. I moved down here, and Verizon in the neighborhood I was awful. Hated it. Switched to T-Mobile. Now it's great. Sometimes when I travel, T-Mobile not so great. Just kind of depends on where you are.
It's inside my house. If I walk out,
get a different provider in your house, then.
The call's coming from inside the house. Psych. No, it's not even going through.
Yeah.
USB, or universal serial bus, for anybody who might have forgotten, has been historically a little hard to plug in correctly because you always get it wrong, right? Ajay Bhatt, who led the team at Intel that created USB, tells NPR in an interview today that the design for USB was intentional and that a version that could have plugged in either way would have been possible, but also would have required double the wires, double the circuits, and double the cost. Bot went on to say, quote, in hindsight, based on all the experiences that we all had, of course, it was not as easy as it should be. The newest model of the USB interface, which is USB-C, very prolific these days, was released 5 years ago and is reversible. So wasn't always, though.
Did he explain why it takes 3 times to plug it in, though, in the article? Why it's wrong,
that,
right?
That is human error.
No, my daughter gave me a video of my grandson. He's like 2 years old and he grabbed a USB cable for some reason. He tries to plug it in. It goes wrong, right. It's in human nature. There's something.
I think the first wrong is actually right, but we're too tentative.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to break
it. We're used to it being wrong.
And then when you get the second wrong, you're like, well, that one definitely is wrong. And so you go back and you give it a little extra oomph when you put it in.
Thankfully,
USB-C has been out for 5 years and has solved all of this for all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We have zero problems. Thank you, USB-C. It is kind of funny. And I'm sure we've all had these moments where you plug it in and you're like, of course I got it wrong. Of course, because you get it wrong so many times. It's like,
you're used to blaming
yourself.
Just
must be some reason why I'm getting it wrong all the time.
Right in
it's the same way I feel about my Apple TV remote. I hold it wrong at the beginning every single time I'm trying to change the channel or change whatever.
I got a little case for mine, a little rubber case from Alibaba, and that fixed it.
Well, there are solutions that I
except when I grab it and we're actually watching TiVo and it turns the TV on, switches it to the Apple TV. Yes,
but I think there are so many of us who have gotten it wrong so many times. We're like, the universe is conspiring. There's just no way I would get it wrong this much.
And here's the thing: do you remember RS-232? Do you remember all of the serial cables? You used to have to. And, you know, sit there and go like, okay, I think the angle is there. And then even when you know it's right, you're like, but the pins aren't quite there. Okay.
But that's usually because it was like on the back or something, you know.
Yeah,
you
it was always in an inconvenient location. These were, you could have had them be lots more expensive and be reversible. But I get why they said, like, then people won't use it and we need uptake. Remember, USB is universal now, but it wasn't always. So they needed people to use USB, so they needed to make the cables cheap so they could be included in the box with the device. So you'd just say, oh, well, I have the cable, I'm going to use it. So I like this defense of like, yeah, no, we knew it wasn't optimal, but there just wasn't an optimal solution that would have worked. So
now,
we did our best.
Next thing you know, you're going to be apologizing for how badly they named them with this USB 3.0 and 3.1.
I will never defend that. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
They hate us.
Yeah. Well, it's 3.1755GE. The naming is dumb. But most people don't care about the name. So if there is a defense of that, it's that, man, probably doesn't affect most people in their daily lives, right? It only affects us when we're trying to buy the right cable and we get annoyed. USB-C does get rid of the reversibility problem, though, right? Yeah. Everybody's happy.
I love USB-C.
Except when it's
Thunderbolt. And you don't know it, or it isn't Thunderbolt, and you thought it was, and it was USB-C, and it didn't charge. Other than that, I love it.
How often does that happen to you?
There's the speed of the cable actually affects. Like I've got a dock that'll do.
I realize it's an issue, but does that happen to, like with any of your setups now?
Well, I know it's happening. I don't notice the speed difference, but I know it's wrong. So it totally bothers me, Sarah.
Well, I don't know. I think it's for all of us who have been like, USB is the worst. Why can't they just make it reversible? It is nice to know that the person who led the team is like, we knew that.
Yeah.
We were trying to make it cheaper for everybody. Okay. We understand.
Yeah. I guess that's why I like this story is this is a person going, no, I wasn't an idiot. And no, you're not wrong that it would have been easier to make it reversible, but you weren't there working on it, making the decisions. Here's why I did it.
I will add, before then, you had to deal with at least two to three different style of cables.
Right.
Whether it's a parallel, Centronics, serial RS-232. It literally made everything simple overnight. Yeah, you can plug in backwards, but you know what? Both ends are different, so suck it up.
Yeah,
Roger is the final word.
Right,
I see you. You're just tweaking us. He says, "I've never put a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack in the wrong way. Like, entirely different thing.
You don't have an option to do that.
It's an analog signal."
Wait, but then there's the three ring versus the two ring, whether you've got a microphone on it too.
Good point. Take that, I see you.
Yep. Yeah. Plot thickens.
Well, I think that's all that we have to say about the USB. So except to thank our dear friend and inventor, Ajay Bhatt. We appreciate your work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
To get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com.
Also, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. If you hang out on Facebook groups, join our group if you haven't already. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Let's check out the mailbag.
You know, our very own Allison Sheridan, who happens to be our guest today, wrote in earlier this week about Monday's show. Allison says, you were talking about Instagram not continuing their human help to regain access to a stolen account. You felt that a human helping would be better for users. I have a counterexample. Most or all of SIM swaps have been accomplished by the user being able to talk to the human at the carrier into thinking that they're the real owner. Perhaps not having a human in the mix is better for the user to regain their account.
Yeah, there's problems both ways, Allison. You're right. it's not. And remember, Instagram isn't discontinuing the human help. They're adding the ability to do it without a human in the mix. But that it still bugs me because when you're talking about this, if you train people right, they are more effective at restoring the account if they do it. When you do the automatic thing, if it works, then I'm on your side. I guess I just wasn't trusting that Instagram would make this work because they haven't been able to make it work yet.
Yeah. And I guess one thing that we don't know in this entire story is maybe 900 million people successfully regained access to their account with human help or without human help. Mm. But the ones that didn't, it was actually somebody scamming and doing the getting the SIM swap by faking who they were. So it might actually be very successful. It's just that when humans are involved, that's where you can do the phishing sort of stuff where you fake your way through.
The SIM swap stuff usually has to do with bad practices, too. They don't properly have the impediments set up to stop someone because they're like, oh, well, nobody would ever do this. Nobody would ever lie. So it happens so infrequently, and then suddenly it was happening frequently, and they didn't change their policies.
In my experience, when you fall back on, well, we just need to train the people better, that's where it always ends up failing.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. People are the weakest link. But it wasn't even just about training the people better. It's they trained them wrong. It wasn't humans making mistakes. It was the policy said, if they say this, go ahead and give them the new SIM. And that was a bad policy.
Okay. I gotcha.
Thanks to everybody who gives us feedback every day. Keep them coming. And also thanks to Allison Sheridan for being with us this fine Friday. Allison, where can people keep up with your work?
Well, the best place is podfeet.com. And I want to plug a fabulous Chit Chat Across the Pond light episode. And I love my own definition of light. I interviewed Dr. Devin Palaszczuk about her work rehabilitating psychopaths in prison, violent criminal offenders, and how she's been able to rehabilitate them. She recently won the Queen's Birthday Honor, as in Queen Elizabeth, and her perspective on the work that she's done is absolutely fascinating and you know, a little terrifying, which is always fun.
Wow. Yeah, not light at all, but kind of amazing, you know.
That's what I call light.
People just write psychopaths in jail off, right? And she's saying, well, maybe we can actually rehabilitate them.
Yeah, actually, she's demonstrated that they have been able to.
That's great.
Yeah, very cool. It's a fun interview, too. She's awesome.
Well, folks, we like to remind you that the best way to support Independent Tech News directly is at patreon.com/DTNS. It is the majority, by far, of our income. And we like it that way because it means we're only answerable to the people who actually listen to the show and want to support it. If you want to have influence over the show, if you want to, we just had our quarterly hangout yesterday, and we asked people, like, send us things through our Discord, through our Patreon. That's where we'll pay attention the most because we know you are invested in the show. Then become a member, patreon.com/DTNS.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Keep the feedback coming. We love hearing from you. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Be back Monday. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good night, Rob.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.